Welcome to Create Your Own Light, where we harness our past, we embrace our future, and learn to conquer the roadblocks along the way together. I'm your host, Travis Howes. Let's get on with it. This episode is brought to you by YourWelder.com. YourWelder.com is an online directory of mobile welders. Whether at your home or at your industrial processing plant, we come to you. Our community of mobile welders can repair anything from the neighbor's mailbox that you just backed into or the cat bulldozer sitting on your job site. YourWelder.com is a directory of highly skilled professionals willing to help you on your job site on your timetable. YourWelder.com screens all of their welders using tools like photos from social media apps such as Instagram, Parler, and Facebook, even face-to-face meetups. YourWelder.com was built by actual industry welding experts who actually perform this type of work on a daily basis. And here's the best part. They're veteran-owned and operated. So go check them out at YourWelder.com. And also feel free to check them out on social media, where I'll include their links in the show notes. I am flying by the seat of my pants over here, y'all. I got my damn microphone is absolutely busted right now. It's leaning on a table. One of the screws are broken off. I think my girls are playing with it and somehow broke it. But yeah, here we are. Episode 120-something, 123. I'm out here on a farm waiting for Stanley Steamer. They gave me a 12 or a 6-hour window to come clean my carpets. And of course, it's noon. It's between 12 and 6 a day. They're probably going to come at 5. Why is it they give you these big-ass windows and then everybody takes the end of the window? You know, one thing that gets me is the mailman. So my mail every day shows up at like 4:30, 5 o'clock for years. I'm the last stop on the route. You would think those motherfuckers would switch the route up from time to time and drive their route backwards. You know, because if I have something like that I need to get done and I'm waiting on a piece of mail, I get it on the close of business on a Friday. I'm just fucked. I got to wait till the following week. Happens all the time. Listen, man. So we just had, we had our big Shreveport event get pulled out from underneath us. So here's what happened with Shreveport. I'm literally, we had 1300 people registered for Shreveport for January the 16th. Okay. And I was showing up on the 14th. And I'm in the airport in Atlanta getting ready to board my connecting flight, and I get a message from my host, hey, the ice storm is supposed to hit tomorrow, which is the 15th, and they're looking at closing the entire city. Do you want to cancel? He gave me the opportunity to cancel right then. But then I thought about it, and I was like, you know, I can't do that. I just because I don't have the answers doesn't mean I can't, I can turn around. And think about first responders out there. We never know what we're walking into, but we got to go. We can't just cancel if something doesn't appear favorable. And so I said, no, man, fuck no. I'm getting on a plane right now, and I'll be there in, you know, 2 hours. And lo and behold, we land in 2 hours, and as soon as we land, I got a text. Hey, event's canceled. They shut the city down. And now my dumb ass is stuck in Shreveport for 3 days. I got my sister. I have my niece with me because they were going to be my merchandise girls. They were going to sell my books and shirts for me. During the breaks on the, during the event, because it was such a large event that I can't possibly handle the influx of people by myself. So I needed help with that. And so now I got my sister and my niece stuck in a hotel. We were stuck in a very nice hotel, by the way, but still we were stuck there for 3 days, man. We couldn't get a flight out. Everything iced over. And it cracks me up because people up north are like, oh, that's nothing. But you know what? It is nothing. But when you have just even a half inch of ice that falls down south and we don't have salt trucks and plows and we're not set up for that, that can hurt people. So we had to cancel the event, and I was utterly devastated because I was so pumped up to start off my 2024 with this big, massive event, and people were coming in from all over, and to have it just pulled out from underneath us like that was just a kick in the balls. But the fortunate thing is we got it rescheduled. So we're rescheduled for March the 9th. We are already at 750 registrations. So we're going to close it out, I think, around 1,000. So if you haven't registered or re-registered, please go to that. You can't use your old registration because of platform restrictions through Eventbrite, whatever. So we had to create a new registration. So I just want to let everybody know, if you were planning on coming to Shreveport, the event is still on. It's just rescheduled for March the 9th. Now, I've been plastering it through social media, et cetera, whatever. But you better hurry because we already have 750 people registered in the snap of a finger. But that goes to show, too, man, sometimes things don't work out in your favor. And I always have to keep this in the back of my mind. I used to get really pouty when things wouldn't work out. And I'm like, poor, poor, pitiful me shit. But as I've been working through life in this journey of mental wellness, I realized things happen for a reason. And I realized that, you know what, maybe we did have that ice storm. And I try to see the greater good in everything. Maybe that ice storm wasn't even about me. Maybe that ice storm coming through, and I talk about this in my first book, Create Your Own Light. I talk about the universe redirecting people where they need to be in life. What if that ice storm coming through saved one of those people that were going to travel in, because somebody that was going to travel in was going to come to the event and maybe they were going to travel home and something would happen to them. I don't know. But maybe that ice storm kept a lot of people safe. I try to see the good in it. That's how it's got to be. So yeah, my 2024 started off with a gut punch. But we're up and running full speed, man. Events are still selling out all over the country. One of the coolest things that happened was I got into a stolen valor altercation in the airport with a fake Marine. Now, before I get into this story, I'm going to tell you I'm probably not going to get a whole lot of content in on this, on mental health stuff. I'm going to tell you some shit. Watch this. We're sitting at dinner one night, and my niece, she's 21, and she's seen a lot of these stolen valor videos, whatever. And she asked me, she said, "Uncle Travis," she goes, "have you ever run into that?" And I was like, "Girl, don't even get me started. I have run into my share of people." And she asked how frustrating it is, and I said, "You know, when I was younger, it was a lot more frustrating because I had something to prove back then. I was still egotistical. I had to prove that I was the fucking alpha. Blah 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 blah. All this stuff, and I was just insecure with myself. Was all it was." Come to find out. But as I've gotten older, I've tended to give less of a fuck because it doesn't affect my life. Now, I have an obligation as a Marine and we all do as Marines, we'll tell you, you know, all Marines are kind of like this. Like, we'll call out people. We're very honorary, very prideful. I'm not saying the other branches are not, so don't take that. But we really do police our own in a sense. So, and I know the Army does a great job of this too. I've seen videos. I don't know that I've seen Air Force or Navy. Well, I guess you do have Navy, your SEAL stolen valor and all that. Listen, I can't speak on the other branches. I can only speak on the Air Force or the Marines because that's the one I served in. But listen, anyway, we get this. I see this guy standing in the airport, and he has a camouflage backpack. Now, he's probably, I don't know, I'm 45. He's probably got 7 years on me, top. I'd say 7 years on me. So he's probably 52-ish, 53, okay? I look at this guy, and he's got this camouflage backpack with a Marine Corps flag that was sewn onto it. So this is aftermarket. Like, you could tell he took this patch and had this put on this backpack, this camouflage backpack. Now, the issue is this. The camouflage backpack was not Marine Corps camouflage. It was the digital Army print. So there's two different types of camouflage. Like, the Marines have their own digital print, and the Army has their digital print. And I saw that red Marine Corps flag blazing on the back of this backpack on an Army digital print. And right there I go, everything about this motherfucker is false. He had this big, like, biker beard that, like, when it came down, it went to both sides. Like, he had two big handles coming off of it. He had a bald head. He was trying to pull off this whole hard-ass look. And I sat there and I go, do I want to put myself in a position to possibly get into an altercation in the fucking airport? And I said, no, I don't. So I ignored it. And then we start boarding the plane. I tried to be the last one on the plane. And lo and behold, this guy and his wife were on standby. And they end up lining up directly behind me. And it's taken everything I got to not ask him. And I sat there, I turned around, and I looked at that bag one more time. He's standing behind me, and I saw it. And it was the equivalent of this. I want you to picture a Lowe's patch. Lowe's home improvement store. What color is that? Lowe's, everybody knows, is blue. That would be like taking a Lowe's home improvement patch and sewing it onto an orange backpack. Now, you know orange represents Home Depot. So that's the problem there. That was the one indicator I needed to know that this guy was fake. That's how obvious it was to me. So anyway, I'm standing there and I finally said, fuck it. Let me ask the guy the million-dollar question. So I turned around and I said, you Marine Corps? And the guy said, absolutely. And he said it with such arrogance. And he knew nothing about me. Now I had a long sleeve shirt on. There's no tattoos, no kind of indicators that you can see on me. And I asked him, I said, what are you doing? What'd you do in the Marine Corps? And before I tell y'all what he did in the Marine Corps, I want to give you about 10 seconds to guess what you think his job in the Marine Corps was. Out of all the fucking jobs in the United States Marine Corps, the thousands of jobs out there, take 10 seconds right now and answer what you think his job was. If you said sniper, you win the prize. Of course he was a sniper, because everybody that serves in the Marine Corps is either MARSOC or Force Recon or a sniper. And the guy told me he was a sniper. And right then I knew he was full of shit. And so then I started drilling him on questions while we're standing there. And there's people in front of us. The line's taking. This story's going to take a minute. I hope y'all got time, because we're just going to bullshit today. So I asked him, I said, oh, you were a sniper. Who were you with? Now, when I ask you who you're with, if you weren't in the military, anybody that knows is in the military, when somebody says, who were you with? Now you have an obligation to tell me what unit you were in, or you can tell me to go fuck myself, but we never do, because when somebody asks who we're with, we have a thing called unit pride, and we can't wait to tell you what unit we were with and who we served with. This guy said, oh, I wasn't with anybody. I was with a 2-man group that deployed to guess where. He's a little bit older than me, not much older. He deployed to Cambodia, Laos, and Thailand. I'm sorry, but Vietnam ended in 1973. This guy would have probably been in his teens during that time, if that. All right. So now I know he's even more full of shit, because he's trying to tell me some Vietnam story, because that's the quickest thing that he could, that's the quickest lie he could come up with, and it didn't make any sense. So I said, okay, so you weren't with anybody and you deployed to Vietnam. When did you get out? And he said 1986 or 87, excuse me, 88, somewhere around there. So now you're in 15 years after Vietnam even ended, somewhere around there. And you're still over there? So his wife's standing behind him. So I said, so you weren't with anybody. You can't tell me who were you attached to? Because snipers are usually attached to, or not usually, they are fucking attached to some kind of unit. Or they are assigned to a unit. And then they go out from there. He couldn't tell me any kind of unit designations. I asked, when were you in boot camp? He gave me some bullshit. He told me he was on the West Coast in Camp Pendleton. But he fucked up and he said, I was in the 3rd Marine Division on Camp Pendleton. And I went, 3rd Marines on Camp Pendleton? And he said, no, I'm sorry, 1st Marines. Which is, he realized he screwed up. But here comes the biggest lie of all. When I asked him when he graduated boot camp, you ready? He told me, I didn't graduate. I was such a good shooter that they recruited me from the rifle range and deployed me from there and stuck me in a sniper element. You heard what I just said. This is the only Marine I've ever met that didn't graduate boot camp. See, to earn the title Marine, you have to graduate boot camp, first of all. I don't give a fuck how well you shoot on the range. They're not recruiting anybody. That's not how it works. The Scout Sniper Program has what they call an indoc, which is an indoctrination where they go out, they hold a test. If anybody that wants to come, you're welcome to come get your ass kicked during their test. If you pass their test, you go on to the next phase. I had an opportunity to take that test, and I said, fuck all that. I was already in the infantry, and we were wearing suntan lotion laying out at our barracks when those guys came around wanting to do the indoc. And I was like, fuck this. We're going out and partying tonight. I'm not doing that. So anyway, so what I'm getting at is this guy was clearly living his lie to me in front of his wife. Now, he had lied to his wife. He had lied to whoever runs in his circle his entire life. He knew I had him dead to rights while I was questioning him, and he still kept pushing that lie because he's an insecure fuck. He's not happy with his own life. He had to make up some bullshit about his life to feel some kind of power in his life, okay? His wife got so angry with me just asking him basic questions. She goes, What do you want? His DD214? I said, ma'am, I would love nothing more than to see this man's DD214, but I know it doesn't exist. And I'm sure there's some kind of lie that would justify why it doesn't exist. So I'm good. I'm good. So we turn around. This man, you could see it in his face. He knew that I knew. We walk onto the plane, and now I'm pissed because I don't want to put myself in these predicaments. Because if you ever heard the story when I was on the Cleared Hot podcast with Andy Stump, I told the story about the time I got into a physical altercation in the gym. This was many years ago with a guy who was claiming to be Delta Force, who is not in Delta Force, and they don't even call it that. So they call it something else. Anyway, I didn't want to do that, especially in the airport. You know, I don't need that shit. So anyway, we get on the plane and his wife is still behind us, but around the corner as we're like rounding into the aisle. And I'll just look back at him and I whispered, I'm like, we both know what's up. And he just nodded at me like, yeah, you got me. That was it. That's the story of my sniper. It's absolutely ridiculous why people have to do that shit. But I mean, I got stories for days about stupid stuff like that. I had the opportunity to do something yesterday that, man, I'll tell you, the more that I do this, the prouder I am and the more I want more of it. Is I got an opportunity to just sit down and really be a father. And what I mean by that is yesterday my girls were out of school and their mother asked if I could keep them for the day. And I will promise you this, you're going to learn some things about me in my next book that I'm putting out that are not so pleasant. And part of that is that I could not be a decent father when my children were very early. And you know that from earlier podcasts too. But I'm actually going to talk about things in this next book that I don't even believe I've opened up on this podcast about, because it's hard, man. It's hard to be vulnerable to the point where you're being honest with yourself. And I used to be scared to death to watch my own children because of what it would do to me and the kind of person that I had turned into. Because I was running from all of my issues and I wasn't addressing the problems that I was having. Instead, I was taking it out on everybody. Well, that has long since passed and I haven't been that person in many years and I'm proud of that. But yesterday, I got to really escape with my girls. And to some, this might not sound like much. And this may even sound like, well, dude, this is what you're supposed to do. But you got to understand, for a guy like me, this was like climbing Mount Everest for me. And yesterday, I feel like I reached the peak of that. And I just want to spend as much time on that summit for the rest of however many days I have left. That's what I want to do with my life. And this is what happened. I watched my girls, and they had a little friend come over. And I went to the gym that morning, and I came home, and they wanted to go shoot basketball. And both of my girls play basketball. They're in jiu-jitsu. Y'all know that. But we go to the basketball court. We went to an indoor gym. Man, we stayed there for 2 hours just shooting basketball. I didn't look at my phone one time. It just sat over off to the side, fully immersed in the moment with my girls and their friend, teaching them a few things that I've learned from watching their games that they're, you know, they could do, you know, use a little correction on. And we had so much fun. And then after that, all we did was we went and we got smoothies. And we sat there and we drank smoothies, the three of us. And then we went back home and we stayed at home. They played on the trampoline while I started writing in my book some more on my computer in my office. And then we waited until nighttime. And then we went to their friend's oldest sister's basketball game. So the entire day was pretty much about them. And it revolved around them having fun and them doing sports. And I woke up this morning with just like the fullest heart. And you know, I just want more of that. And anybody that's going through what I once went through, man, I'm telling you, like, you still have an opportunity to change it. You still have an opportunity to put everybody and everything that you love in front of you instead of putting them behind you. And you really can focus on being happy again. The problem is that we get to such a place of misery, of hatred, of self-doubt, of unworthiness, that we become so miserable that's all we know. And we don't even recognize how miserable that we've truly have become. That's just normal for us now. I was fortunate enough to where I was able to open my eyes years ago and see what I was becoming and actually really own it and say, I don't want to be that anymore. I don't want to be that person. And I fucking changed it. And it feels amazing. I can't wait to hear stories from other people. And I get them all the time. You know, people that are, they're working on things and they're celebrating small victories. But just to think that you have children that look up to you and they're mirroring everything that you do. And when you don't give a fuck about that, that's when you know you need to work on yourself. You absolutely do. You know, I got a full tour schedule. I love what I do. But I don't even want a tour because I want more days like that. Now, I'm going to tour. I'm not going to cancel that. But man, nothing makes you feel more whole than when you feel whole. And it's crazy when you feel so empty and you feel so much, you have so much hurt and pain inside of you. You want to see other people that way. You want to see other people hurt and you don't want to see other people happy. And so what you do is you bitch about things and you complain about things and you actually get happy when you see other people held back, and you actually get happy when you see other people not achieving success. That misery loves company is real. But you know who else loves company? Happiness. You just got to choose which you want to be. Do you want to be miserable or do you want to be happy? Because I'm telling you too, man, when you're happy, you want to see other people happy. I don't know many happy people that want to see people upset and that want to see people not doing well. I don't know many happy people that are really jealous people. The only jealous people I know are miserable motherfuckers. People with hate inside of them. People that are not good with who they are or who they're becoming. You have the ability to change all of that. You got to let it go. You got to let it go and press on. I heard something the other day. A man said something about, it was a scientist. I don't know if this is going to make sense because I always mess shit up. There was a scientist talking about life after death. And he says, there is no life after death. Now, look, I'm not trying to get into a religious thing here. I'm just telling you what I heard, okay? So don't come in my inbox trying to convince me that Jesus said this and Jesus said that, all right? Because listen, I'm a dumbass. I'm just telling you what I heard. But it made sense. The guy said, there is no life after death. It just goes black and then it's over. You don't feel anything anymore. You don't see anything. You don't hear anything. You don't have thoughts. It's just over. And then I was sitting there. I was like, okay. And then what he said next hit me like a fucking freight train. He goes, I want you to think back to a time before you were born and tell me what that was like. Think about that. You don't remember that because you didn't have thought. You didn't have feelings. You didn't have all of this. Why am I telling you this? Because if this is true, I don't know if it is or not, whatever you believe in, something is coming for all of us, and that is death. Why do so many of us spend so much time on this earth, the limited time that we have, why do we spend it in misery? Chances are, it's because of experiences in life that have altered our thinking, that have altered our behavior, and we have grown accustomed to accepting that altered state. We grew into a miserable person. Not one of us, not one of you listening to this right now was born a miserable motherfucker. Not one of you. Every single one of us, when we were children at some point, were smiling, we were happy, we were carefree, and we believed in good things. And then over the years, all of our experiences varied and brought us to where we are now. The one cool thing about this is you have the power and you have the control over it if you want it. You gotta want it. You gotta want to believe that. Just as much as people want to believe in their faith, you have to believe that you can dominate your happiness. You don't have to be that person that sits on the couch that recluses and hides from everything. I was that guy. That was normal for me for a decade. It was normal for me to be like, man, fuck that person. Fuck this group. Fuck that couple. I don't want to be around any of them. And I would come up with every reason and every justification as why those people sucked and why that situation sucked. And you know what sucked? I sucked. I sucked as a human being. That's because the life was sucked out of me. And I refused to let life come back into my lungs because I grew so comfortable with who I became. You gotta want that shit, man. I get so many messages, predominantly from wives, and this ain't me picking on police officers. I get messages from mainly police officer wives. There's a lot of firefighter spouses too, but if I had to weigh them out, I would say the police wives by far reach out more than fire wives. And they tell me every single time that they're married to me. They don't use those words, but the person that they describe is who I used to be. Man, and it shatters my heart because I realize and I understand where their husband is, but I also know where he can go. And the problem is this. I'm writing about this in my next book, and I want you to understand this. I don't want you to wait until my book is out to discover what I'm about to tell you. You have to create happiness. Hence my last book, Create Your Own Light. Now, this is not a book plug. I just happen to say that. You have to create your own happiness. If you wake up every day and you're in a job that drives you fucking crazy, you're in a marriage where you're back and forth, you're in a household where your kids bring a lot of stress to you, and then you go to that stressful job, wondering if you're going to get fired, wondering if you're going to get sent to prison, wondering if you're going to be in a lawsuit. And then you come home at the end of the day and you got to turn around and go work in another 8 hours because you're so short-staffed. And then you go back to work. And then you get hit with an overtime job because you got to pay bills. And that overtime job, you're still policing. You can't get away from it. Tell me where you're going to overcome your situation when you're doing the same thing over and over and over and over for years. And then on the days off that you do have, you're pounding drinks, you're trying to numb things, you're not talking to your family members, you're pushing them away, you just want to be alone. I'm telling you, because that's who I was. I was the absolute worst version of myself, and now I'm the absolute best version of myself. So I know both versions very, very intimately. I'm going to tell you what saved my life, saved my marriage, saved my children witnessing their father being a happy man versus a miserable man. And I'm going to tell you what it is. It was me getting this farm. I'm not telling you all to go out and buy a farm. I'm not telling you to go out and do something stupid like I did, because I bought this at a time where it was either gun in my mouth or something's got to change. This was the gun in my mouth, something's got to change moment for me. And I sold some real estate that I had. I said, fuck it. And I bought something where I could escape to. Now, I realize everybody's not in the same situation, so please, it's not what I'm telling you. I'm just telling you what I did. I had to break the cycle of a toxic cycle because I was doing the same thing over and over. I was waking up miserable in a home I didn't want to be in a chaotic environment I didn't want to be in. I was going to work. I was coming home. I was feeling underappreciated. I was feeling extremely stressed, and I was a piece of shit. And because I was a piece of shit, because I was a horrible person to be around. The way that I spoke to my family, the way that I treated them, that's who I was. It was a piece of shit. But my wife hung the fuck in there. She hung in there and gave me space. She didn't push. She did some things that upset me, but she didn't know better because I didn't talk to her. Because I was like an iron chest. I would not open up. But thank God she is who she is, because I wouldn't be who I am right now. I wouldn't have been able to make it as far as I've made it without her in the picture. I didn't give her credit in the beginning. I didn't talk about my family in the very beginning. When I wrote that first book, I didn't talk about them because I didn't know how to, because I was so ashamed of who I was that I didn't know how to be that vulnerable. I knew how to tell the world that I was hurt, and I knew how to tell the world that I didn't want to be alive, but I didn't know how to tell the world what a real fucking monster I was. The only thing that helped me was breaking that cycle and having the support of someone to help me break that cycle. Finances are a big thing in any home. I was trying to amass wealth through real estate, and I was doing well. And my whole point, my whole mindset was, you know what? I never had anything growing up. I want to leave my children with something, because I knew I was probably going to kill myself. I knew that I was going to die early, and I needed to amass some wealth for them when that happened, so I wouldn't leave them starting off with nothing like I started off with. That was my goal. That was how I thought back then. But then I got to a place where things started changing just a little bit for me, and I realized, you know what? What if I do deserve happiness? What if I can beat this? What if I can arrive at a better place in my life and actually look back and have my family intact and everybody's happy? It seemed so foreign to me. That seemed like a foreign concept to me, because for so long, nobody was smiling. Everybody was upset. Everybody's walking on eggshells. I didn't think it was possible. I was standing at the base of a mountain, just looking at the top from below, and there were clouds blocking the peak, and it was fucking nighttime. I couldn't see it. I knew it was up there. I just had to start climbing. So that's what I did. So my wife and I, when we sat down, obviously a concern was, hey, what do you mean we're going to sell these houses that we own in a very, very good location? Is Charleston, South Carolina, which is one of the top destinations in the world where everything's only going up in value. It's only skyrocketing. And I sat there and I was like, what if I do live to be an old man? And I thought, what if I don't kill myself? What if I live to be an 80-something-year-old man and all I got is a pile of fucking money? Then what? I let all these years go by. I was just miserable. But I got this pile of money. So I said, fuck it. And sold everything. And the chapter in my book is going to be called Sell It All. And I'm not going to give you the long story, but I knew I needed space for me. And I was fortunate that I had a wife that supported that, because I know some people do not have spouses that support decisions like that. I know that some people do not have spouses that are going to say, you know what? Go spend 5 months alone on this property that you have. And when you're right, we'll be right here. Come on back. That's what I had. That's what I have. You have to find something in your life that gives you room to thrive. It can be fucking tennis court. It can be basketball. It can be basket weaving. It can be archery. It can be riding a goddamn bicycle. But you got to have it. Whatever it is, you have to find it. You have to discover it. And you have to obsess with it. To get away from the thing that makes you sick. Because I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. If you spend enough time doing something that makes you happy, you'd be surprised at how much hate leaves your body and how well you can become. If you've been with me on board since the beginning of this podcast, you remember when I was talking about I couldn't be at home, I couldn't be back in Charleston, and I could not sit at my house in Charleston, that I had to be out here at the farm. I'm proud to tell you now, I don't spend as much time out here at my farm anymore. You know why? Because I'm fucking good. Because I spent time out here. I allowed this place to heal my wounds so I can be the best version of me. And I can love me again. And I can love my family the way that they need to be loved. And you know what I love more than anything? I love being home with them now. I don't mind being in Charleston anymore. I can't wait to see my girls grow up there and play their sports there and make their friendships there when all I could do is beg to get out of that place. I didn't need to get out of that place. I needed to step away from a place that made me sick so I could heal. Sometimes you got to do drastic shit, but you got to sit back and think, what do I want? Do I want my family? Or do I want this fucking career that's killing me? And you can't choose both sometimes. I'm not telling people to walk away from careers that are really cool, because we do have some great careers. But I am telling you, you can do both and be happy. Travis Howes can't figure it out for you. You got to figure it out for you. I was just going down a... So I went down a rabbit hole earlier looking up dead relatives. And I was looking, because I'm writing so extensively about my grandfather, DC, who his name was Donald Calvin Howes. I'm writing so much on him, like a 40-page chapter on him and his life and how he was as a man and how it impacted his whole family. And it got me going down this rabbit hole of trying to learn about other family members that I never knew. He had a brother named Groover. This guy looked like a straight gangster. He had a brother named DN who was, I won't tell you his fate, but it wasn't a good one. I'll tell you that in the book. He had all these other relatives that are just hard-ass people. And then when I'm sitting there, some of them have pictures on Ancestry.com. Some of them don't. And I was just sitting there looking at them. I was wondering about each and every one of their lives. There was nine siblings. And I don't know anything about any of their lives other than my grandfather. And we don't think about this as human beings. We don't think about our legacy that often. We don't think about, hey, when I'm dead, future generations of my family, they're not even going to know who I am. They're not even going to know who you are. Legacy is important to me. And it may or may not be to you. You may be okay with dying one day, and nobody in your family tree outside of your children and your grandchildren ever knowing who you were, what you stood for. That sucks, man, for me to think about it like that. I want to stand out in my family tree. My entire family tree, I look back at it, and it was all sharecroppers and farmers and laborers and loggers. And they were hardworking people, very hardworking people. But none of them really stood out and changed anything. And that's why I want to implement change in this industry. I wouldn't mind having a legacy that my children's children remembered, oh, great grandpa Travis, he helped pioneer a mental health movement that's still going today. That's important to me. I don't know why. I don't know if that's just like an insecure part of me needing something, needing some approval. Because when you're dead, you're dead. But I want my life to have meant something. I want it to have meant more than just waking up every day, going to work and being fucking miserable and letting my life pass me by. And I want that for every one of you too. I want your life to be meaningful. I want you to feel what it's like to have purpose, because it's an amazing feeling. I don't want you feeling bogged down. I don't want you feeling like you're at the bottom of the mountain looking up into the clouds in the dark and you can't see the top like I once did. I want you to climb that motherfucker wherever you are, and I want you to reach the pinnacle. And when you're standing up there, I want you to look around and I want you to have everybody that you love and care about standing there with you. But that takes change on your behalf. It takes sacrifice on your behalf. One of the main questions I'll get all the time is, man, how long did it take? I'm still doing it. I've been doing this for 2 decades, working on myself this way. Each year gets a little bit more easy for me because I've put in the hard work in years past. There were some years where I thought I was putting in work, but I wasn't putting in work. I was skirting around the real hard stuff. You got to put in the work, man. I guess that did get a little bit deep for a little while. You guys, if you want to check out my 2024 schedule, I'm not going to rattle off all the dates, but please go to my 2024 dates, check them out, register. Any of the links on my website that are red, those are open to the public. Any that are blue that are labeled private, those are obviously private. Now, Shreveport, Louisiana, I'm going to keep plugging this because it got canceled. On the 9th, March 9th, Shreveport, Louisiana, at the Shreveport Convention Center. Bring your ass and come ready to fucking get, let's light this bitch up again. I flew my ass all the way out there one time, round trip, hung out for 3 days, even went and did the news, then came home. Now I got to come back again, do it all over again, but I'll do that because this is what I do, and I love it, and I do it for you. I hear people, they're like, oh man, that's 2 hours away. Cry me a fucking river. I came from 5 states away. You can come from 2 hours away. Sometimes you need to be slapped in the face with this shit and bring your wife, bring your husband, whoever you're married to, bring a spouse, 18 years or older, family member. You want to change your life? Come hear the real deal. It's free. Don't cost you shit except gas money. Maybe a hotel if you want to come to the area. There's casinos there if you like gambling. I'm not promoting bad fucking habits, but there are some things to do. It's a great place to get shot from what I heard. It's a very violent town. If you want to come down and get murdered, you know, we can do that too. And I'm just totally kidding. I'm just joking on Shreveport right now because I'm going to bust their ass when I come out on that stage. I'm going to fuck Shreveport up. I love it. 2025, my tour schedule's filling up really, really quickly too. So there's plenty of options for you all, and I can't wait to see you all. I can't wait to have that second book out. I'm going to try to have it out by May, but, you know, I am a Marine. I write like a fucking second grade Marine. The editor is, they definitely have their hands full because I write like I speak. Just kidding. I actually told the editor, I'm like, look, grammatical errors and spelling, just fix that. I don't care if the sentences are run on, you know, sentences. I'm not really flipping out over that. But if cat is spelled K-A-T and not C-A-T, man, fix that motherfucker. You know what I mean? So anyway, I'll tell you one story, and I don't know if I've ever said this before. I dated this girl one time. This is when I knew I was becoming really secure with who I was. Her mother and father were very pompous, and her father was this big businessman up north. And he actually would not meet me because I was a police officer. Literally, this is fucking words from her mouth, not mine. She thought, or he thought, that I was beneath them. Okay. And I did meet her mother one time. And she goes, when I was meeting her, I'll never forget the first time I met this woman. We were speaking and she stopped me while I was talking. And she goes, listen, if you're going to meet Mr. I'm not even going to say his last name, but if you're going to ever meet Mr. So-and-so, you need to learn to speak the King's English. And I looked that woman dead in the face. I go, people communicate just fucking fine where I'm from. I don't need no King's English. And I said it just like that. And, yeah, that was my interaction with her. But, you know, I don't do well with people like that. So when I write books, I don't write for motherfuckers like that. I write for people like me. If you have a higher education, great. But you know what? Not everybody does. And not everybody reads at a fucking grad school level, you know? So I'm a little bit of this and I'm a little bit of that. So I think it can relate to a lot of people. I appreciate y'all. I love y'all so much. I can't wait to see y'all in Shreveport or any of the other cities that I'm coming to, man. Y'all keep kicking ass. Let's go ahead and start that climb. Get on that mountain. Start addressing your bullshit. Later.